Schmidt versus Lennar and Serenity Ranch, case number 09-CA-0727. Counsel, if you are ready to proceed, we're ready.
If it pleases the court, Carl Berg, registration number 19683, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Edward C. Levy Company, DBA Schmidt Construction Company. With me today is my associate, Trevor Young, who is with my firm. The issue presented, gentlemen, today for your consideration is whether the trial court erred when it dismissed a mechanics lien foreclosure action or claim that Schmidt had filed against lots in a subdivision for paving work it had completed in that subdivision.
Mr. Berg, I hate to interrupt you after you just stated your first sentence, but I just would like to ask you a procedural question here that has been concerning me.
Yes, sir.
It relates to the trial court's 54B certification.
Yes, sir.
If I recall correctly, that 54B certification relates only to Lennar. Is that correct?
I don't know, Your Honor. It was my belief that it related to Serenity Ranch as well, but I'm uncertain. I apologize.
Well, I believe there's specific language in it that says that it relates just to Lennar, and in light of that, I was wondering whether the 54B certification is appropriate here if it didn't relate to Serenity.
If it didn't relate to Serenity, under 54B, the certification would still apply to Lennar, but it wouldn't apply to Serenity Ranch, correct?
Maybe not. But I do have in front of me now the 54B order. It says, as such, final judgment pursuant to CRCP 54B is hereby entered with respect to Schmidt's second claim for relief against Lennar for foreclosure of its mechanics lien. So the question I have is whether you can have an appropriate 54B certification that addresses one issue, which normally you can have, but here it's one issue that also relates to Serenity, and we may have a situation where Serenity may not have been covered by the 54B certification. So do you have any thoughts on that? I know you were not
Your Honor,
to address that.
I apologize. I wasn't prepared to address that issue. I know that Serenity was identified in the opening brief as well, but that doesn't address your particular question.
Okay.
That certainly could be an issue.
Okay, thank you. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on it. You've answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah. Getting back to the issue, another way to state the issue is, if Schmidt is not entitled to a mechanics lien against this particular subdivision, our paving contractors in Colorado, the only class of workers who are essentially not entitled to protection under Colorado's Mechanics Lien Act, as Your Honors will recognize from the amicus brief filed by the Colorado Asphalt Paving Association, this issue is of critical importance to the asphalt paving industry. And in the event of an adverse decision with regard to this particular issue, the ramifications are going to be immediate and they're going to be severe, and I'll address those briefly later on.
Mr. Berg, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Before you go further. It appears to me that by some comments in the briefs, but I'm not sure if it's in the record, that the streets which your client constructed were constructed on property owned by a public entity. Is that correct?
Not technically, Your Honor. The roads had been dedicated in the plat as required by the governmental regulations governing all subdivisions as they exist in El Paso County. So the plat had been recorded in 2005, and that had the required dedication language. The dedication acceptance hadn't occurred yet, and generally, under the regulatory schemes, that doesn't occur until the premises are actually improved, because the governmental entities want to ensure that the work has been completed in accordance with, in this case, the county standards. And as Your Honors are aware, public property can't be leaned based on City of Westminster versus Brandon Sand and Gravel. And so there's no ability to lean the streets themselves.
If the acceptance had not occurred at the time of construction by Schmidt Construction, who owned the property underlying the rights of way that are in issue here at the time of construction? And if there's record, is there, whatever's in the record?
The City of Westminster case answered that precise question, because the lien claimant in that case argued that the dedicated property hadn't been accepted yet, and they tried by virtue of the relation back doctrine. Mechanics liens relate back to the date of first work. They said the streets hadn't been accepted as of the time the work was done, and therefore they should be entitled to lien those roads. And the court in City of Westminster said, no, that's not the case. They're not entitled to a lien. So who owns the property, Judge? I'm not certain, but we know that they can't lien it, because by virtue of City of Westminster, the property is considered to be public property. So in this case, Schmidt was responsible for paving the interior roads in the subdivision. This is a plat which was the approved plat. It was attached as addendum 1 to our opening brief. It was also exhibit D to our response to the motion to dismiss. And this is similar to all subdivisions in Colorado under our scheme. And the work completed by Schmidt was directly on those roads immediately adjacent to the residential lots in that subdivision. The lots were owned by three different entities as of the time Schmidt did its work: Alexandria Corporation, which was originally a party to the action, that's been resolved. Lennar owned a number of finished lots, and then Serenity Ranch only owned the tracks in the subdivision, and those are tracks A through C. The court dismissed Schmidt's mechanics lien foreclosure claim based on its reading of the decision in Schmidt v. Fast, a case that came down from the Court of Appeals in 1989. It also relied on the Mechanics Lien Act itself, 38-22-101. Before I discuss the Fast decision, I'd like to review very briefly with you the purposes underlying the Mechanics Lien Act and the mechanics lien rights. As you, your honors, are aware, the right to a mechanics lien is an alternate remedy to an in personam action against the party with whom a lien claimant contracted. Here, Schmidt had contracted with an entity by the name of L.C. Wild. So they asserted their breach of contract claim there. They also had their in rem action against the property which benefited from their work. And that really has been the hallmark of entitlements to mechanics liens under Colorado law for almost 100 years now, and that is you're entitled to the lien where you benefit particular real property, and the value of that real property is enhanced by virtue of that work. Another important principle here is that the lien statute, being remedial in nature, is construed in favor, and liberally in favor, of mechanics lien claimants. And that's because it's an equitable remedy. Once you establish that you're within the class of those people entitled to a lien, the lien statute's liberally construed in order to provide you the benefit of the Mechanics Lien Act. For almost 100 years, the most important factor with regard to the determination of the validity of liens has been whether the property was benefited by the contractor. And under the Hess-Flum decision in 1917, the court said that the lien extends to all the property benefited by the improvements. The question then becomes, and what you need to address here, is whether the work itself has to be physically on the lots themselves in order for the claimant to be entitled to a lien. And I believe that the court answered this question in the decision of Compass Bank versus Brickman Group. That was a Colorado Supreme Court decision in 2005. That was a blanket lien case, because the contractor in that case had asserted a blanket lien against common areas in a condominium project as well as 9 housing units in that project. Now, the claimant in Brickman hadn't done work on the 9 units itself, or themselves. He had only done work in the common areas. And in that case, the Supreme Court said, I quote, "The mere fact that labor was not performed on and materials were not provided to specific building structures or other improvements does not, of course, mean that they were not benefited by the contract." And the court there allowed the blanket lien to stand, not only against the common areas on which they actually worked, but also on the 9 housing units which had benefited from that work, and allowed the blanket lien to proceed.
Mr. Berg?
Yes, sir.
What do you think we should do about the language in the mechanics lien statute that refers specifically to including adjacent curb, gutter, and sidewalk, but doesn't say streets?
That's a good question. The Mechanics Lien Act, if you look at it as a whole in 3822.101, is very broadly worded. The addition of the adjacent streets, curbs, and gutters language was added in 1965 in response to a particular decision. But if you look at the case or the statute as a whole, it doesn't define everything for which you're entitled to a lien. The basic thought being, under the Mechanics Lien Act, that you're entitled to a lien where you've improved the property. And this court, and no other court other than Schmidt v. Fast, has addressed whether a paving contractor would be entitled to a mechanics lien for work that wasn't directly done on the lots. So I just don't think that, other than Schmidt, the courts had that opportunity.
What is your response to the argument that has been made that if the General Assembly intended to include streets within the breadth of the mechanics lien statute, it would have included that word along with curbs, gutters, and sidewalks?
My response to that argument is that if that is the proper approach here, the list would be never-ending, Judge. You'd have to add streets. You'd have to add whatever else, sewers that are completed. You'd have to add whatever element, and you'd get away from the overarching principle of the statute that the lien extends to all work that's been performed.
Going by your argument, they wouldn't need to include curbs or sidewalks.
No, they wouldn't. And it would go back, you're exactly correct, Your Honor, because it would go back to the fundamental principle, whether the work directly benefited the property that's been leaned.
Wouldn't you say a sidewalk adjacent to a lot would benefit?
Yes, it does
so why
benefit.
Why did the legislature choose to specifically mention sidewalk?
Because in the Fleming versus Prudential case, the court said that the benefit to the property which was leaned was only incidental. The primary beneficiary of the sidewalks was the public at large. And so I believe that decision was based on the correct principle that we need to look at the benefit. Is it a direct or is it an indirect benefit? And so that's the distinction. So I don't think you need that, because I think our case law already establishes the principles that govern. Was there a direct benefit? Is the work necessary for the convenient and beneficial use of the property? And since my time is running short, I do want to address the Schmidt case, the Fast case. In that case, I think there's important distinctions that need to be made. Schmidt, in that case, didn't do work inside the subdivision. In fact, the lien there was on a road that only led to the subdivision. There was other access to the subdivision. And the court there addressed the Hess-Flume consideration directly and said that the benefit there is only indirect. In contrast here, we have what I believe is a direct benefit. Misty Acres Boulevard is the only access to the Misty Acres subdivision. That was part of the paving that was done. The internal roads are the only access to the lots. The roads directly benefit the lots in the subdivision. In fact, no one in this day and age would actually purchase a lot if there weren't paved streets, and that's a regulatory requirement. And so those are important distinctions to be made. The roads are necessary for the convenient use and beneficial use of the individual lots. And for that reason, FAST doesn't apply. If it did, as I said at the outset, paving contractors would be the only unprotected class of workers, and the result of that would be very detrimental. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Chris Dawes for the Appellee, Lennar, Colorado. With me today is Adam Weens from my firm as well. Your Honors, before addressing some of the issues I think are worthy of comment here today, I wanted to address very briefly the issue of the 54B certification.
Thank you. That way I don't have to ask you that question.
And Your Honor, unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to give you as clear an answer as you'd like. That's frankly an issue I hadn't looked at. But I do know from a timing standpoint, in the proceedings below where I was involved as trial counsel, there was first the order of dismissal granted in favor of Lennar. That hung out there for a while, and at some point, Schmidt came in, and actually we had a status conference with the trial court, and at that time, Schmidt had indicated they were interested in getting 54B certification, and so it was suggested that Serenity go ahead and file a similar motion. If Your Honors look at the motion that was filed for Serenity, it was virtually verbatim to the motion filed by Lennar. Promptly following the issuance of that order, the 54B certification motion was filed by Schmidt in this case. And again, I don't know that helps you, Your Honor, but I do know that much.
Well, is it your understanding that that 54B motion concerned both Lennar and Serenity, or just Lennar?
I don't have the text in front of me, Your Honor, but I know the idea was to perfect an appeal on this lienability issue. That was clearly the intent going into that.
Okay, and I gather from your presence and the absence of presence of counsel for Serenity that Serenity has not otherwise participated in this appeal.
I think I've conferred with Serenity's counsel along the way when our briefing came due in this case, and my sense was that it was no longer an economically viable entity and that counsel didn't intend to participate.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honors, I also wanted to comment on one of the statements that counsel made at the beginning of his argument, which was the importance of this case and the fact that it stands to have immediate ramifications on what goes on in our state. And I don't disagree this is an important case and an important issue, but as to it having immediate ramifications, FAST has been the law of Colorado now going back to 1989. Everyone who's got an interest in this issue, be it Schmidt themselves, be it builders like Lennar, be it the amicus parties in this case who represent the Paving Association here in Colorado, everyone has known what the law is on the lienability of off-site paving and street work. There is no real issue here. That's been the law since Schmidt v. FAST. And if you go back before that and we get into the Brannon case, it was very clearly the law in Brannon at the time. So I think that the playing field has been what it's been for nearly 50 years now. And so to suggest that there are immediate ramifications that somehow law is going to change it in this if you uphold the trial court's ruling, I think it is perhaps misplaced. And again, I go back to the Brannon decision because I think that's really where some of the key law emanates from in this dispute. And if we were just to take this subdivision map as an example, by analogy, you would have basically three pieces of property in play where there was paving put across, or a street put across three parcels by the paving company in that case. And you had a city right-of-way, for instance, would be the first parcel. Then you would have the defendant in the Brannon case would be in the middle. And then over on the right here would be a third private property owner. And again, so the paving came all the way across the three properties. And when the court looked at that, there were very similar arguments made to what we're seeing in this case back in Brannan then. And the court held in that case that a lien could be claimed on defendant's property only to the extent of the cost of the paving upon it, not to the extent of the entire amount owed. So it, by analogy, in this case, there's been argument in the briefing about how material a benefit this paving was to Lennar because it's within the subdivision. But the fact of the matter is, in the Brannan case, the paving was every bit as beneficial in material, if not more so, to that private property owner that was in the middle. And the Brannan court came out and said, you can't lien this property for services rendered here. You can't lien this property for services rendered here. And that concept carried forward to the Schmidt v. Fast decision in 1989 with a very similar holding with the same principles. And I think is also important to note is when you look at this from a timing standpoint, after the Brannan decision, there was certainly opportunity for the amendment of the Mechanics Lien Act, as your honors had indicated in some of the questioning before. And in fact, there were amendments to the Mechanics Lien Act following Brannan, but there was no material change to that issue. The concept of off-site paving or street work wasn't added to the statute. And so I think when you look at some of the case law that was cited by the Fast Court at the time, they cited People v. Mathis, as well as the Music City the Estate of Duncan case, again, as your honors picked up, if a statutory provision settled by judicial construction is unchanged when the statute is amended, then it is presumed that the General Assembly agreed with that construction. And so in this case, the fact that leaning for street work wasn't added following the Brannan decision, I think speaks volumes. And again, following the Fast decision in 1989, the General Assembly had the opportunity to amend the statute, and in fact did amend the statute. Again, this issue was not changed or addressed by the General Assembly following 1989. And I suspect, I don't know what efforts Schmidt made or the or CAPA, the trade organization that filed an amicus brief here, I don't know what they did. We tried to research it to find out legislatively what happened. But I strongly suspect that they tried to change the law and were unsuccessful. Or if they didn't try, then that's, I think, a consequence of their own conduct, that the law is what it is on this issue.
Mr. Dawes, let me ask you this question. The mechanics lien statute uses the word including, where it refers to sidewalks, gutters, and curbs. And the word including usually means that there's something else that could be part of that category. Why wouldn't that kind of interpretation apply here to say, well, that something else could be streets?
Well, and I think in this case, what's transpired with the statute is very telling, because we did see the legislature come out and add specific language to address issues where there had been some judicial controversy. They did add in language to address some specific situations where there were questions about the lienability for certain work. And again, street and off-site paving work wasn't among them. But yes, Your Honor, it does say including. I understand that. But again, I think the General Assembly speaks volumes when it addresses other issues that have been judicially challenged and doesn't with this case when it was challenged in both the Brannan decision and also in the Fast decision.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Berg, let me ask you a question then. Is it your position that under these circumstances, a paving contractor would not have any lien remedy at all, but would be restricted solely to an action against the person or persons with whom it contracted, in this instance, L.C. Wild?
Well, I think that may be the case, although I think Your Honor picked up on some of these issues in the questioning that went on with Mr. Berg earlier, and that is at some point the actual paving work that was done on these streets was accepted by the city. Prior to that time, I haven't looked at that specific issue, but I think that the developer as a whole was entitled for all the property, including where the streets were ultimately installed. So I think there would be a lien right that exists up until the time dedication actually occurred in favor of the city. In terms of other potential remedies that a paving subcontractor may have in this case, one of the things we touched upon in our briefing is, again, all interested parties, including home builders and including paving subcontractors, know what's in the statute, know about Brannan, know about the FAST decision, and there are certainly ways to build in contractual protection for a subcontractor like this. There could be letters of credit posted. There could be mechanisms in place where you'd have an equivalent solution such as a surety bond, so that at the end of the day, there is ample collateral or even liquid collateral available for that subcontractor to be paid. And again, that's something that Schmidt appears not to have ever looked at, or if they did, they didn't make that a matter of their business practices, but that was certainly something that was available for them. There is also the possibility of some recovery through the judicial process through an unjust enrichment claim. I think that kind of claim can properly lie for a subcontractor like Schmidt in the right circumstances. This circumstance, I would say, is not one of those, because Lennar paid for, it basically got what it paid for. It paid for fully finished lots, and that's what it got. And in fact, I think the Schmidt recognized when it originally filed the unjust enrichment claim, that's a claim that's available in theory, but in practice, I think when they looked at the facts here, they knew that was a claim that was barred, and that's why they agreed to dismiss that claim with prejudice. Your Honors, I think it's also important to at least touch upon briefly some of the out-of-state authority that we've seen cited by Schmidt in this case. And again, there is a lot of law throughout the country on these mechanics lien issues, but at the end of the day, as both parties acknowledge in this case, mechanics liens are a function of state statute. They're unique to each state. Each state has their own statutory scheme. Each state has their own case law construing those statutes. So in this case, I think that the cases, and there's a half dozen to, there are eight or nine cases that are relied upon, I think are not terribly persuasive in this context. I think it's also worth noting that in the FAST decision, a half dozen of those cases were expressly cited to this court 20 years ago, including Woodcrest and Mitford, Ledoux, Kobayashi, Hesflum. These are not novel arguments we're seeing for the first time now. These were arguments that were advanced when this court ruled on Schmidt 20 years ago. So again, I don't think they're any more persuasive now than they were when they were cited to this court 20 years ago. Your Honors, I don't have anything further at this time unless you have questions of me.
I guess not. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Berg. I'm sorry, Mr. Dawes. Counsel, thank you for your arguments. The matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess, and the clerk may so announce.